This is The Intersection. My name is Mark Riley. Thank you so much for joining us and listening to my podcast. Before we get into talk about the coronavirus, we must say something about the ugly injustice, which some are calling a lynching, that took place back in February near Brunswick, Georgia. A young black man, Ahmaud Arbery, was gunned down by two white men in a pickup truck. His crime? Jogging while black. The person who chased him along with his son alleged that Ahmaud Arbery resembled a person sought in a number of area break-ins. The man who did the shooting is Gregory McMichael, and he wasn't charged with a crime on February 23rd when this killing took place. That might well be because McMichael is a former investigator in the Brunswick District Attorney's Office, and he served as a cop for 7 years. Two prosecutors have already recused themselves from the case because of their ties to McMichael. The first prosecutor argued there was no cause to arrest him or his son. The case has taken on a new wrinkle after a video surfaced just this week. That video has caused black folks in Georgia to accuse Glynn County law enforcement of covering up a murder. It doesn't appear Ahmaud Arbery was armed, nor is there any evidence linking him to the break-ins that led McMichael and his son to give chase in the first place. This is a case of jogging while black. There's very little else that you can call it. While the latest prosecutor says he'll impanel a grand jury, that's not nearly good enough. The prosecutor who declined to press charges against the McMichaels needs to be removed immediately. Gregory McMichael needs to be arrested pending the results of the grand jury proceedings. That's how most people accused of a crime are in fact treated. You know, it boggles the mind that this is 2020 and a young black man with a future ahead of him is gunned down based on fitting a description. We also ought to be clear about the fact that this case flew under the radar until that video footage surfaced. Is there any excuse whatsoever for this kind of conduct on the part of people who call themselves law enforcement? I don't care where it is, Brunswick, Georgia, or Brooklyn, New York, it doesn't matter. This was, in fact, thus far, a legal lynching. Ask yourself, what would have happened if a couple of black people, father and son, had gotten in their pickup truck and chased a white guy around and eventually shotgunned him to death? Those people would be in jail. And the law enforcement people in Brunswick, Georgia know that. Given what happened to Trayvon Martin in 2012, let us see where this scenario goes. And hopefully, Ahmaud Arbery will not have died in vain. There will be justice, we hope. You know, we're going to continue the episode today asking a simple question. What exactly is madness? The current president of the United States may not in fact be mad by the clinical definition, but there are a host of other terms that describe his complete mishandling of the COVID-19 pandemic. Incompetence immediately comes to mind. Encouraging people to protest a lockdown that saves lives is ridiculous at best. Posing the response to COVID-19 as a choice between saving lives and commerce is barbarism at its worst. Yet this is what we're confronted with. Let's consider a couple of things. Protesters against the lockdown, some carrying Confederate flags, swastikas, and firearms, are covered as if this nation is locked in a half-and-half battle over lockdown rules. It doesn't even look like that's the case. Every poll that I've seen, and maybe I haven't seen all of them, but every poll that I have seen has a strong majority supporting the lockdown. Yet why are the protests taking up most of the air in the room? Because, and this is not, you know, to start calling lamestream media or whatever, but the media covers the protests as if those folks represent half the country, and those who want to continue the lockdown for their own safety represents the other half. And that does not appear to be true. But that's the impression that gets pushed. And make no mistake about it, the protesters understand this well and clear. They know that the more they protest, even as they put their own lives in jeopardy, that those protests start to gain steam. And now we have a host of states, many of them in the South, that are relaxing or have already relaxed certain lockdown rules, certain lockdown regulations. And what has happened in a couple of them? Cases of the coronavirus have gone up. Now, I believe that the answer to the question of why protests against the lockdown are taking up most of the air in the room has to do with our totally compromised administration. These are people, starting at the absolute top, who have spouted more nonsense since the pandemic began than most people should be subjected to in a lifetime. I don't want to recount all of them here. I'd be here for another 5 days. But consider the falsehoods and deflections of our president. Not a day goes by that he doesn't say or do something outrageous. And to what end, you might ask? And we've talked about this before. This is all about his reelection. That's why he's doing what he's doing. That's why he takes time out of his busy multitasking schedule to say he wants the border wall painted black. Like that's going to save a single life that is at risk because of the coronavirus. Even his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, has gotten in on the act. This is a guy who contradicted himself in an incredible 15 seconds on whether the coronavirus came from a Chinese lab. I guess he's following the example of our so-called wartime leader. Be very clear, ladies and gentlemen, that history will judge the actions of this administration quite harshly, and it may not take all that long. Latest reversal on the part of our president. There was word that the coronavirus task force, led by Vice President Mike Pence, was getting ready to disband. You remember Mike Pence, he was the guy that went to the Mayo Clinic and didn't wear a mask. And then his wife said he didn't know he was supposed to wear one. And the Mayo Clinic turned back around and said, well, never mind. So the president, after word leaked that they were going to disband the task force, what happens? He turns around and says, no, it's going to continue indefinitely. And maybe there'll be some different people involved in the task force. Maybe that's because their mission was never really to mitigate deaths, but rather to prepare Americans for the idea that some people must die so that others can go back to doing business and that others can go back to work. We have seen people, and I don't know what planet Chris Christie, the former governor of New Jersey, lives on, but he essentially said that. Well, you know, if it's older people, if it's this person, if it's that person, well, okay, we have to get the economic engine of the country back up and running. And if some people have to die to make that happen, sorry. That's what they're saying. That is precisely what they're saying. And in my judgment, this is just my own judgment, my own opinion, there is no excuse whatsoever to sacrifice lives on the altar of commerce. That is barbarism, ladies and gentlemen. Consider for a moment that in the past we've come to accept that in wartime, some will die. In this case, though, our leaders tell us to accept that ending lockdowns will cost lives, but that it's necessary. Necessary. And you want to hear how American workers are being treated? Some states are saying that if people don't go back to work, for example, the meatpacking plants. President Trump said, well, the meatpacking plants have got to stay open because people have to be fed. which means, of course, that those employees have to go back to work. Never mind whether they have adequate PPE, never mind whether there's proper social distancing, they got to go back to work. And anybody that's ever been in a meatpacking plant might well know that it could be just a wee bit difficult to do social distancing. But you know what? They're telling people in some of these states, Iowa is one of them, that if they don't get back to work, they're not going to get unemployment benefits, and they're going to lose their health care benefits as well. This, ladies and gentlemen, is not America. Neither, by the way, is demanding fawning media coverage of a totally mishandled COVID-19 response. You've heard President Trump over and over and over again say that the media, I mean, this is a guy who said he's more persecuted by media than Abraham Lincoln was. Not that he was alive when Lincoln was, where he'd be able to make that comparison with any degree of accuracy whatsoever, but what the heck, he was by the Lincoln Memorial, why not say it? Nobody can disprove it, and he knows it. Soon, this virus is going to recede. Soon, the fog will lift. And hopefully soon, people will see clearly the bill of goods that they've been sold. When we come back, the Biden conundrum. This is The Intersection. Thanks so much for listening. Welcome back to The Intersection. My name is Mark Riley, and thank you so much for tuning into my podcast. For updates, like my Facebook page at Mark Riley Media. And now to the continuing saga of Joe Biden and Tara Reid. We now know that Reid's allegation that Biden sexually assaulted her back in 1993 is not going to go away, at least not now. Maybe not ever. That's because it could have the effect of scuttling his campaign for president. We do know this. Only Biden and Reid know what actually took place back in 1993. Those who were desperate to see Donald Trump beaten in November seemed prepared to minimize Reid's allegations. On the other hand, there are people who both believe Reid and still support Biden. And finally, those who believe Reid and want to see someone else as the Democratic presidential nominee, or else, quite frankly, they won't vote for Joe Biden. So far, the Democratic Party establishment seems ready to stick with Biden. One wonders if they would be equally supportive if the person being accused was Bernie Sanders. I'm just saying. That's, of course, speculation, but one thing is clear. If Joe Biden chose a woman to run with him as vice president, that person will face some daunting questions, questions that might make the most attractive candidate have second thoughts. You've heard some of the names that have been bandied about. Some of them are not going to run with Joe Biden as long as there is some doubt, and there's plenty of doubt. Now, some people will look at the sexual allegations, the huge number of sexual allegations, and it could be anywhere 20, 22, 23. At this point, it doesn't matter because those allegations were leveled against the current occupant of the White House. Should that make a difference? Should that have made a difference back in 2016? Oh yeah, it should have, but it didn't. Now, should it make a difference now? Maybe, maybe not. I will say this though. If the conduct of Donald Trump is the bar by which his opposition is measured, then what's the point? Yet dumping Biden now would negate the votes of all those who backed him through the primaries. And believe me, the Democratic Party is not ready and not prepared to do that. The real nagging issue here is whether those who won't vote for Biden because of the Reid issue can be convinced to change their minds. If they sit this election out, the result could be, or could well be, the same as in 2016. Would it be worth it? I would argue no. In fact, an emphatic no. Trump has dealt this nation a series of extraordinary wounds, from immigration to his handling of COVID-19. If he serves a second term, he'll be likely to appoint one, maybe even two, justices to the U.S. Supreme Court. That could well be the end of a woman's right to choose. However, you know, and I've been doing a lot of reading, back and forth, pro and con, about Biden and Reid. And there are people who are going to say, on the one hand, I believe her, even though there have been elements of her story that have changed. And there are going to be people who say, I don't believe her because elements of her story have changed. We're not going to know. It's not going to be decided one way or the other unless there is some concrete evidence that emerges. And when I say concrete evidence, I'm talking about beyond a phone call to Larry King, beyond people saying they, you know, she told them about this back in the day, and beyond Biden's blanket dismissals of all this. Something would have to come up that would end up categorically giving credence to one side or the other here. Now, people in the past have held their noses and voted for a particular candidate before. I have. Some of the people that ran for and won the highest office in this country were not my first choice. Bill Clinton wasn't my first choice. But when the time came, I held my nose. And by the way, he had sexual allegations against him. And I held my nose and voted for him anyway. However, I do understand very clearly why there are some people who are not willing to do that, who believe Tara Reid and believe that her allegations are a deal breaker when it comes to voting for Joe Biden. The alternative at this point, I don't know. You know, there's some people say, well, maybe we can get Andrew Cuomo. Or, well, maybe, you know, maybe Bernie, you know, could re-energize his campaign and maybe, you know, come close enough to Biden to have a brokered convention and Bernie could come out on top. It's a lovely idea. And I say this because, you know, I've actually sat and talked to Bernie Sanders for a period of time. And over a relatively long period of time, going back to when he first served in the U.S. House of Representatives. And Bernie, I believe, is an honorable man and a man that has ideas that will take this country on a more humanistic track going forward. And we're going to have to get on a more humanistic track going forward, or this country is going to implode. Make no mistake about it. You know, these people that protest about lockdowns and that sort of thing, these are people who have an agenda. Personally, I've studied politics and interviewed politicians for a very long time. And I'm not dumb enough to think that Joe Biden would put us on the same path as Bernie Sanders. I know better than that. I do know, however, that, quite frankly, without a substantial number of Bernie Sanders supporters backing Biden, Biden's toast. I hate to say it, but Biden is toast. He's done. Forget it. He won't win. So how to go about convincing those folks? But you could say, well, you know, there may be some discrepancy about, you know, what took place that day in 1993. And if Tara Reid feels that I sexually assaulted her, I sincerely apologize. Now, that may not be good enough, but it might actually be a start. The likelihood is, however, that this is going to go forward as it is now. Tara Reid made the assertion, made the allegation. Joe Biden has denied the allegation. Whether he opens up the National Archives, whether he opens up his papers at the University of Delaware, is not going to make that great a difference in his support or his detractors. So, what to do if you're a person of conscience? If you believe that women ought to be believed when they make these kinds of allegations, that doesn't necessarily mean guilty until proven innocent. Joe Biden, like anybody else, is innocent of these allegations until he's proven guilty, and nobody's going to be able to prove him guilty. Does that create a rationale for you to vote for Joe Biden? What would be your inclination if you are not a believer of Joe Biden's denials? If you believe Tara Reid, what does that mean for you? You're going to vote for Biden? There are people, and there are a substantial number of people, who say, I don't disbelieve Tara Reid, but I'm voting for Joe Biden anyway. Is that a position that is somehow compromising one's conscience? It's actually up to you. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, our final segment will deal with how badly culture and cultural institutions fare as the COVID-19 lockdowns are lifted in the United States and across the world. Thank you so much for listening. This is The Intersection.
Listen, discover, think. It's Intelligent News Analysis with Mark Riley.
Welcome back to our final segment of The Intersection. My name is Mark Riley, and I would urge you, send me an email at mark@markrileymedia.com. If you have a topic that you want me to cover, email me at mark@markrileymedia.com. Now, those of you who know me well, and there may be one or two of you, know that I have an abiding interest in and love for culture. Culture from all over the globe. Culture of all types, music, art. And I'm starting to despair what will happen to cultural institutions when life goes back to whatever the new normal turns out to be after the coronavirus. There are a lot of examples. For one, can a symphony orchestra perform in the context of social distancing? In other words, can they still perform to the same standard when they're 2 meters apart, all of them? And you know, you have to understand, symphony orchestras are relatively large ensembles. Can they do that? Will they sound the same? What about the underground dance scene that sustained me throughout my adult life? You know, I've been on some dance floors where there weren't even inches among people and between people, much less 2 meters. Can places survive with social distancing? Or are they going to have to stay shut and perhaps close down? Because social distancing simply does not work for that type of application. Well, off-Broadway in New York City, be able to turn out the groundbreaking work they have done in the past? Will museums still be able to bring extraordinary exhibitions from around the globe? Will live music concerts ever be the same again? Maybe it's too soon to ask these kinds of questions, but let's give an example. Let's look at a couple of things here. Let's say there are large concerts that come back. What happens if, assuming they have contact tracing, that there's one person among fans of a particular group that has the virus and they proceed to sneeze or cough or something in a crowd of people, and suddenly a lot of people at that same concert end up with the virus? We saw what happened during spring break down in Florida, where there were like 70 some odd kids, I think, from Texas that went to the beach, and 40 of them tested positive for the virus. These are risks that, by the way, ending the lockdown sooner or later are going to involve. These are risks, risk factors, and all of them drive culture. So maybe will we have a different type of culture going forward? I hope not, because I love the culture that we have, again, all over the globe. Whether it's the drummers of Burundi, or the Kodo drummers of Japan, or any number of different art exhibits, museum exhibitions, I've been privileged to see a lot of this stuff, both inside and outside of America, and I would hate it for there to be some drastic alteration in that cultural landscape. But some of these cultural institutions may not be able to survive. They can't survive being closed for months at a clip. And again, I'm not sure whether or not I'm the only person that are asking at, or is asking these kinds of questions. I don't think so. Beyond the artistic value, culture is a serious economic engine throughout the world, particularly in cities around the world. Will it still be that economic engine when all is said and done? I have friends who run entertainment companies who have found that most of the compensation schemes established by their government do not apply to them. They're getting by on the skin of their teeth. I wonder if individual entrepreneurship, which by the way is a wellspring from which much culture evolves, whether that will suffer in the future as people opt for safer types of employment. In an ideal world, culture will pick up where it left off. Right now, I'm not so sure. Mainstream culture, like pop music and the like, should be okay. They traditionally make some people a great deal of money. And I'm not just talking about the artists. There are all kinds of folks in pop music that make real good livings servicing, managing, booking various pop artists. My question is, will big culture be the only culture that survives COVID-19? I hope not. Let's look on the bright side for a fraction of a second. Let's say an effective vaccine against the virus is developed, and soon. How long after that would you venture out of your house to go dancing, to see a live concert, to visit a museum, to see an art exhibit? In short, to live your life as you did before lockdown. When would you feel safe? Hopefully, we'll have the answers to these questions sometime in the near future. Thank you so much for listening. The executive producer of The Intersection is Ms. Kim Jack Riley. Till we meet again, please stay well.
Now that I've lost everything to you, you said you wanna start something new, and it's breaking my